It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. Looking forward to the weekend, but we have one more half hour of Giants talk to take care of before we get to the weekend. And our question for today is, who do you think is going to lead the Giants in touchdowns this season? Now, obviously, Eli Manning and his passing touchdowns does not count in this equation because, quite frankly, that's an easy one because he's going to throw for 30-plus touchdowns. No one else is going to come close to that. So I'm talking about rushing, receiving. You can throw special teams in the mix if you want. If you really want to get creative, you can throw defensive touchdowns into the mix. But let's be honest. So I think it's an interesting question, and I think you can go a lot of different ways, and I think you can have a bunch of legitimate answers that do make a certain amount of sense. So let's start with the guy who I think is the answer, and this is who I think is going to do it, and that's Andre Brown. Last year he led the team in touchdowns. He missed half the year. He's proven to be a pretty darn good goal line back. He's good in short yardage. He's good around the goal line. And to me, he's going to get double-digit touchdowns. And when you tell me a guy is almost guaranteed to get double-digit touchdowns, I'm going to go with Andre Brown. Now, he might not have the same opportunities this year that he had last year. Last year, the Giants did not have that big play offense going like they've had in years past because mostly of Hakeem Nicks's injury. So they had a lot of shorter yardage goal line inside the five type of opportunities where they had to punch it in, maybe more than they've had the couple years before then. But I still think they'll have enough inside the five stuff where they're going to want to run it and get the ball in. And I think Andre Brown's going to be that guy more times than not. Now, you want to go with David Wilson? I could see that. You don't think Andre Brown can stay healthy? You like David Wilson running in 4 or 5 from 20-plus yards and maybe getting a couple around the goal line? I'll buy that. I'll buy Nicks or Cruz for obvious reasons. Both big play wide receivers. They can make big plays. They make plays near the goal line. Cruz out of the slot. Nicks outside. They love that back shoulder fade with him. I think those are legitimate answers. And I think a dark horse in this question, quite frankly, is Brandon Myers. We saw the job Martellus Bennett did around the goal line last year, and Myers arguably is even more dependable. Not quite as tall, but he'll be where Eli Manning needs him to be, and you know how valuable tight ends can be, punching the ball in through the air around the line of scrimmage. So I think all those legitimate answers, but I'm going to have to go with Andre Brown because I think the Giants will use Brown, if he's healthy, a lot this year, especially in short yardage in the goal line. And I think he'll probably get around 12 touchdowns, and I'm guessing that'll lead the team. I think the receiving touchdowns will get spread out enough between Cruz, Nicks, Myers, and even Randall and Lewis Murphy to a lesser extent, where Brown will lead the team in touchdowns and do it by a couple. I'm not sure anybody else is going to have more than 10 touchdowns besides Andre Brown. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's go right to our phones and start out with Jason up in Montana. Jason, what's going on, pal?
Not much. Hey, John, it's been a long time since we spoke.
Yeah, good morning, Jason. How you been?
I've been doing great, man.
Excellent.
Hey,
excellent.
You know, I think David Wilson's going to have the most touchdowns this season. I just tell you, that guy, seriously, I've never seen really anybody hit the hole with such speed as him. It's been a long time since I've seen a running back also do as many cuts. And I know this is a big thing, and he has a lot to prove. But really the last running back that I've seen run with him, like him, with such intensity is Barry Sanders. I think he's going to have a breakout season.
Well, I think comparing him to Barry Sanders, I understand what you're saying. Look, and I agree with you to the point that David Wilson, since I've been here with the organization since 2007, he is by far the most physically gifted, athletic, explosive player that I've seen since I've been here. And that's saying a lot. I've been here for Burris, I've been here for Knicks, I've been here for Cruz. I've been here for a lot of explosive guys that make big plays. But to me, Wilson has something special out of the running back position. I wonder if he can sustain that great explosiveness when he's getting 15 carries a game as opposed to only 5 or 6. We'll see. Hopefully he can. But I agree that he will be a very effective running back for the Giants this year. I just think that when you get into the goal line territory and inside the 5, inside the 10, it's going to be Andre Brown on the field, only because he did so well in that spot last season.
That's so true. All I really care about is the G-men getting some touchdowns. So
no question.
I'll go to anybody. But, hey, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, Jason, what do you got? Sure.
Hey, I'm making it to the training camp this year.
Great.
And my first one, I'm really excited about it. I just have a really question. I know that the first practice on the 27th, but is there a can we go up there on the 26th and watch the Giants report in, or what?
You know what? There really isn't going to be much to see on the 26th. If you're here on the 26th, the guys kind of just show up, do their conditioning test, which is not open to the public, and then they leave. So you'll basically just see the guys drive up in their cars, and that's pretty much it. So quite frankly, the 26th to me would probably be a waste of your time. There won't be any access for fans or anything. So there's really nothing to do on the 26th. You wouldn't even be let onto the grounds. It's not open to the public. So 27th is the first day, but the day you want to be here is the 28th. That's autograph day, where all the players after practice are going to go towards the crowds, towards the bleachers, and sign autographs to everybody. So if you're going to be here for a day for training camp, be here on the 28th. That's going to be the big day where all the players go out there and try to sign as many autographs as they can after practice.
All right, I will. And hopefully I'll run into you.
Yeah, sounds good, Jason. Keep an eye open for me. I will be
Take
out
care.
On the field. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, bye.
201-939-4513. In some ways, I'm going to miss Albany. Same faces I see all the time, but I will enjoy sleeping in my own bed. That'll be nice. Being in this facility, you know, all year long for 12 months without a break is going to be a little rough. Especially, you know, in training camp, you're working 12, 14-hour days. That can be a little rough. But it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And I know the Giants are working very hard to make the fan experience here at the Timex Performance Center just as good as it was up at Albany. It's a little tougher. There's no campus, so there's not enough room, things of that nature. But the Giants are doing everything they can to really make this great for the fans, to try to give them a great training camp experience for the people down here in the New York City area rather than up in the Albany area. And, of course, I expect we'll see a lot of people from up in Albany come down for a couple of days of training camp, too. It's a big hit up there, and we're certainly going to miss it. Great folks. The university does a fantastic job. And who knows? Maybe one day the Giants will be back up there. You never know. That could happen. Mr. Mara did not rule that out in his statement earlier in the year. But, again, the Giants will try to do everything they can to make training camp as much fun down here at the Giants training facility, the TPC, as they can. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's going on, pal?
What's going on, buddy?
What's going on, Shakes?
Now, I was thinking a lot about this question. When I called in, they told me a question because I didn't even know. And it sounds good. And I've been contemplating, because at first name came to mind was Myers. But then when I was listening to you, and you kind of convinced me on Brown a little bit. I'll say this. I'll say Myers edge him out by maybe like one or two touchdowns.
How many touchdowns do you think Brandon Myers gets?
I think Brandon Myers has a big season in touchdowns, not more in reception and yards. I think he has a big season in touchdowns. Like, he picks up where the black unicorn left off.
Do you think he'll get the double digits?
I'll say yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'll say 10 or 11.
Okay. I think if Myers gets the 10 and 11, that could definitely potentially lead the team in touchdowns. No question.
Yes, exactly. And I think Brown will probably match his last year's touchdown, maybe 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Remember, though, Andre Brown missed like 6 games last year, and he still got the 9 touchdowns.
I know, but we went to him a lot in that situation,
yep.
And we was in them situations a lot. So, but this year, I think it's going to be Wilson breaking out for long ones, so it's not going to be a lot of goal line situations. You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you. And Chase, just for a heads up, what we're going to do now next week and the week after, we're kind of going to go position group by position group, and we're going to have fans try to predict who. And we're going to have the fans try to predict their depth charts at each individual position group where there's a lot of competition. So I want you to put your helmet on the next few days over the weekend and be ready for next week. And we're going to start breaking down these position groups, especially the linebackers. I want you to be ready with your linebacker depth chart. I know you're excited about that.
Okay, I got it. Who are y'all starting with first?
I imagine we'll probably start with quarterbacks. Why not?
Okay, well, that's an easy one. All right.
You know what? I might not be as easy as you think.
I mean, what is it? Eli, Carr, and then Nassib.
You know what? I've actually, believe it or not, I've heard a lot of good things about Curtis Painter and his arm strength. The team actually likes what they're seeing out of him. I think there's going to be more of a competition between Painter and Carr than maybe some people think.
Ooh. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you're dropping some nuggets on me, huh? All right, man. I'll speak to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Shakes. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend, man.
All right.
Take it easy. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. I like to drop some nuggets occasionally. And I actually heard that the other day, which I thought was interesting. Because I was kind of in the same boat. I'm like, oh, David Carr. Why is even – why? Frankly, I was surprised. I always thought Painter wouldn't even be around at this point. But the fact that Painter's even around tells me that there's going to be a competition. And I should have thought of this earlier in the offseason. Because the Giants aren't a team to just throw away a roster spot. So they're not just going to throw them to somebody and be like, eh, whatever. Tom Coughlin wants to maximize the potential utility of every single player on this roster for training camp, even when there's 90 of them. And they wouldn't waste a roster spot on a fourth quarterback unless that fourth quarterback was here for a reason. And Curtis Painter's here for a reason. He's going to have a shot here to challenge David Carr. I mean, I remember the last time the Giants had four quarterbacks here. Probably back in the hefty lefty Jerry Lorenzen days, I think they had 4-1 year. Then Anthony Wright. Oof. Carr wasn't here yet. It was Eli, Anthony Wright, Lorenzen. Not sure if there was a fourth guy that year. I don't remember. I don't think there was. Yeah, I'll have to go back. I don't remember there being four. Neely, remember the last time they had four quarterbacks in training camp, the team? Yeah. Think about it. I'm curious. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's going on, pal?
My question to you. After Hakidix becomes a free agent, after the 2013 season, will the Giants acquire Larry Fitzgerald from the Cardinals for the 2014 second-round draft pick?
Well, I don't think the Cardinals are going to look to – Tim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it always. I don't think the Cardinals are going to look to trade – Larry Fitzgerald. I'm not sure if he's a free agent that year. I'd honestly have to look at it. But Fitzgerald would cost the same, about the same as Hakeem Nicks on the cap anyway. So if they're going to keep somebody, they're going to keep Nicks. And they're going to do everything they can to keep him. And they're going to go through this entire season, see what Nicks can do, see if he can stay healthy, and that's going to dictate where they go next year. If he has a monster year, quite frankly, I think they'll probably franchise him and try to work out a long-term deal. If he doesn't have a big year, maybe they'll try to work on a contract a little bit under market value. We'll see. But a lot of this is all to do with Hakeem Nicks. And to a lesser extent, Reuben Randle, if he can show us he can step in for Nicks if the Giants decide to go in a different direction. But this is on Nicks now. If Nicks has a 2011 type of season where he has 85 catches, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, let me tell you, Giants will make sure he's on their team in 2014, excuse me. Whether it's on a long-term deal or the franchise tag. And I know a lot of people will be like, oh, but Nicks will be bad, mad about the franchise tag. You know, he'll hold out, something like that. I don't think that's the case. The franchise tag is not a bad thing for a player anymore. Hakeem Nicks would make in one year, $10.5 million. And once he signs the franchise tag, guess what? That $10.5 million guaranteed. If he gets hurt, still getting it. Nicks is not getting much more than $10.5 million guaranteed, even if he signs a long-term deal. He might get more guaranteed money spread over the course of the contract, but not in one season. Signing bonus is probably not going to be much higher than that. So the Giants are going to have Akeem Nicks back if they want him. Again, a lot depends if he can stay healthy. It's a big year for Nicks. And I think he knows that, especially heading into free agency. And the Giants is, we've talked a lot about it on the show, have a ton of guys on one-year contracts, and you got to hope that they play to try to earn longer contracts and when they're free agents to earn their money. And I know that sort of stuff shouldn't matter. If you listen to Justin Tuck's interview with me online last week, and you go to Giants.com to check that out, he talked about how, contract situation has nothing to do with, you know, how good I'm going to play. Making money does not motivate me. Winning motivates me. And yes, I'm sure that's true. But let's be honest for a second. This is basic human nature, folks. Think of your job. If you know you're in line for a promotion or the guy ahead of you is leaving and you got a chance, you don't work a little bit harder to try to impress your boss to get a little extra cash? If they have a contest where the employee of the month, for example, wins a cash prize, you're not stocking a couple more shelves? You're not being a little nicer to that annoying customer that can't decide what they want? You're not staying a little bit later to, you know, sweep up the break room? Trust me. You are. That's human nature, folks. And there's nothing wrong with it either. That's the way the world works. That's the way humans work. That's the way capitalism works. If you have a benefit in front of you, you're going to work a little bit harder to get there. Now, what happens with some guys, and this is totally true, they get tight. They know all that money's on the table, and they get nervous. Especially when it's their first big contract. Guy like Tuck, he's already made his money. I don't think you have to worry about him with that. But for, let me think, Linval Joseph maybe. Maybe he might push himself a little bit knowing that, you know, he's on a big contract year and maybe he gets a little tight and tries too hard, tries to get to the quarterback, get his sack numbers up, sacrifices ability to stop the run because he wants to get big numbers in the sack category, because that's obviously going to get him a bigger contract in the offseason. I'm not saying that's what he's going to do or even expect him to do, but that's a possibility you can talk about with some players. You see it in the NBA all the time where guys come out on a contract year, they try too hard, you know, they end up trying to do too much, and they destroy their seasons, and then all of a sudden they're making no money. I mean, look at J.R. Smith. He was going to make $8, $9 million a year until the playoffs came when he imploded. I'm not saying that's because of the contract, but you see that sort of thing happen sometimes when guys press and they try to do too much. It happens. So, again, I wouldn't worry about Tuck with that, but maybe some of the other one-year guys that are on the younger side, maybe they press a little bit. But you hope with the veterans here and the coaches the way they are and the organization, the way they put everything together, that they'll make sure those guys do the right thing. And I think they will. I'm not that worried. But, look, money's a motivating factor. There's no question. There's nothing wrong with it. It should be a motivating factor. I mean, heck, do you think as many people will go out there and play a violent game like football where they have a chance to get seriously hurt if they weren't raking in the dough? Heck no. And that's one of the reasons they get paid so much to do it, because there is an inherent risk in the game. And that's why you even talk to some of these players, and you hear the quotes from them sometimes where, you know, even the guys that have, like, head injuries or concussion syndromes, and you ask them, knowing what you know now, would you still go back and play this game? And some of the guys say, look, I came from nothing. I grew up dirt poor. I lived in a trailer park, whatever. I lived in the slums, in the hood. And this game lifted me up and, you know, got me where I am today. I'm a millionaire. I'm set up for generations. And it's worth the risk. And I get that. Makes perfect sense. So I think it's interesting when you think about things like that and, you know, how a game like this and working hard at it. And trust me, I know a lot of people think, oh, these guys are so lucky. They're blessed with this God-given ability. There are plenty of guys with this God-given ability that don't make it because they don't work hard enough. The guys in the league are the guys that not only have the God-given talent, skill, and athleticism, hone their craft in game, are serious about it, work hard at it, and frankly, in the end, they're good people. I mean, look at these guys on the Patriots. They're destroying their NFL careers because they're acting like criminals and thugs. So you need all those things put together if you want to succeed in the NFL and then therefore in life. So You know, that's why the Giants organization and the players they have in the locker room and, you know, the front office, the coaches, and just the organizational culture helps so much to move these players along. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Let's check out Twitter here, see if we have any answers to our question of the day, who we think will lead the Giants in touchdowns this year. Let's see what we got here. Ashley thinks it's going to be good old Victor Cruz. David Jackson thinks Cruz as well. Knicks will draw coverage. Michael Francis says Cruz as well. That's three for Cruz. Michael Chicono says Hakeem Nicks with 11 TDs for a healthy 16 games. Well, the Giants hope he's healthy for 16 games. Mike DeMoro's with me, says Andre Brown. So is Jeff G-Man. Carlos Romero's going Hakeem Nicks, and we're seeing a pattern here. Jordan Ellison, Victor Cruz. Scott Barman, Victor Cruz. Chris says Victor Cruz. My buddy Ralph Venci says not Ahmad Bradshaw. That would also be accurate, no longer with the team. Will Trelone says Hakeem Nicks. Let's see if I got anything else here. Edward Perkins, Nicks, and Cruz. John Hopkins, who will lead the Giants in touchdowns this season? He's going with Sharknado, which, by the way, I did not watch last night. But simply based on the Twitter reaction to Sharknado, I decided to DVR the replay of Sharknado at 1 a.m. I'm going on vacation this weekend to Boston. I'll be back on Monday. Then a little three-day trip. Walk the Freedom Trail. Maybe a little Boston Aquarium, which is supposed to be very nice. But I will watch some Sharknado when I get back on Monday. I heard it was unintentional comedy of the highest order. If anybody's seen Sharknado, they can call in and tell me about it, too. Looking forward to see what you have to say. Wow, Marwan Ali. He comes up with the best facts sometimes. He's always good on the salary cap. I think the last time the Giants had four quarterbacks was back in 92 when they had Sims, Hostetler, Kent Graham, and Dave Brown. Now, that's on the active roster. I'm just talking training camp. And he says those only, he calls Jarrett Lorenzen J-Load, which I think is kind of funny, the hefty lefty. So, that's interesting. Let's go back to our phones at 201-939-4513. I don't see anybody else here. Everybody else says Nicks or Cruz, Nicks or Cruz, the Spaniard. A lot of new people tweeting today, actually, with this question, which I like to see. I'll try to reply to some of you guys as we go along. Let's go back to our phones to wrap up the show. We have two more calls before we say goodbye. Joe's down in North Carolina. Joe, what's going on?
Yes, I listened to your show yesterday.
Yeah, Joe.
And not among Giant fans, but among sports writers and everyone who picks Hall of Fame people.
Yeah.
Phil Sims, he gets slighted all the time because I believe he is a Hall of Fame quarterback.
You know what? That's interesting. And I think, in my opinion, I think Sims is kind of borderline. You look at his numbers compared. You know, his numbers in his career compare favorably with a guy like Namath. But to me, I'm not sure Namath necessarily deserves to be in the Hall of Fame either based on his career stats. So I think Sims is a borderline guy, but I do agree with
him.
But I do agree.
I'm basing it on.
When
I'm
people,
basing that on Namath, too, because I don't think Namath should be in the Hall of Fame.
Right, and I agree with you. I think when people talk about the best quarterbacks in NFL history, I don't think they mention Phil Sims' name enough. And if he was in a different system, in a different environment, in a different stadium, his numbers would be even better than they actually were.
Right, because he had nobody.
Yeah.
Other than Bravado. He really had nobody.
Yeah, Ingram, Stephen Baker,
Mark Ingram.
Lionel Emanuel, these guys were okay, but they weren't anything special.
Right. He had 199 touchdowns, and the markers usually mount 200. So he was close. He was close, and he was tough. He was a tough quarterback.
And the thing about Sims,
he could take a beating.
Yeah, the thing about Sims, too, is that he threw it in all types of weather, and he threw it down the field. Phil Sims went down the field all the time. It wasn't this dink and dunk nonsense. He threw that ball, and he threw it hard. He threw it far.
Right, right. And my second thing is Hakeem Nicks. Jerry Reese should now start negotiating with him, and maybe they can get him slightly below market value, like six-year contract, $9 million. $9.5 million.
Well, honestly, if the Giants could get Nicks under that type of extension now, I think they'd probably consider doing it. But my guess is that Hakeem Nicks, considering he's going to be an unrestricted free agent last year, unlike Victor Cruz, who was restricted, and there's a big difference there in terms of negotiating leverage, Knicks is going to look for something in the $12 million a year range. He thinks he's that caliber of a wide receiver, and I don't think the Giants can commit that type of money to him unless he goes out there and proves he can stay healthy all year.
But that's it. Now, can he stay healthy? Is he willing to take that chance? If he can, if he loses five games, his market value is going to drop tremendously.
No, that's true, and Hakeem Nicks is certainly – here's the thing, though. I think Hakeem Nicks believes that if he signs a contract now, he will be signing an undervalued contract because he had such a poor year last year because of that knee injury. So I think he's counting on having a bounce-back year. Even if he only plays 13 or 14 games like he did in 2011 or 2010, he can still put up good enough numbers where he can get an $11, $12 million deal as a free agent on the open market.
I don't know. I don't know. He's got some competition with the other one, right? Randall.
No, he does.
Yes, and even Murphy, he really never had a shot.
No, I hear you, Joe. Good call, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, you have a good one. Good call out of Joe. And I think Sims, from a national standpoint, not from the Giant fans, from a national standpoint, he gets overlooked a little bit. I agree with that. Because to me, if you look at their overall numbers in their career, Phil Sims, better quarterback than Joe Namath. I know Namath had the prediction and all that stuff in the upset, and that's all great with his fur coat and big glasses and, you know, hitting on sideline reporters on, you know, on the sideline during preseason games. That's all well and good. But Sims was a better quarterback. Maybe not the bigger name, maybe not the bigger celebrity, maybe not the biggest sideshow. Better quarterback. So if you use that as your standard, if I think Sims is better than Namath, does Sims belong in the Hall of Fame, I could say yes. But in my opinion, Namath's not a Hall of Fame quarterback. So I would keep both of them out, I think, with Sims being right there. I mean, he's right there. He's very close. If he got in, I'd get it. I wouldn't be, like, upset about it. Like, oh, he doesn't deserve it. I'd understand it. I'd get it. And I wouldn't have a problem with it. Would I vote for him? I think he's just on the level below a Hall of Fame quarterback. I really do. I think he's just below. He's like Don Mattingly. Where if you look at Mattingly's stats and you compare him to, say, a Kirby Puckett's, you say, you know what, Mattingly's stats are the same as Kirby's. He deserves to go in. But Puckett got in because people, I think, thought he was this great guy. It turned out that was not the case, by the way. He had his career cut short because of the eye injury. I think people kind of gave his numbers a break because of that. They figured if he played more, he would have had better numbers. But if you take Mattingly's numbers, you can compare him to Kirby Puckett, who was a first ballot Hall of Famer, by the way, which he should not have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. Sorry, Dan from Minnesota. He should not have been a first ballot guy. But he gets in, his numbers are the same as Mattingly. Then Mattingly should get in. But that doesn't necessarily work sometimes in terms of letting people into the Hall of Fame. But I'll tell you what, those numbers from the 80s, as more and more guys get busted with PEDs now, those numbers from the 80s look better and better every year. They really do. And if you look at some of Don Mattingly's numbers from the late 80s, this 86 season through 85 through 88, I believe. 84 through 88, maybe. He had two MVP caliber seasons in there. We're talking 330, 35, 40 home runs. I mean, he was a beast. And he was the most dominant player in baseball for a few years. But his back backed it up, and, you know, he just couldn't do it anymore. It happens. You wonder, too, sometimes with these guys that got hurt like in the 80s and couldn't come back and play, if they had the medical technology they had now, if they would, you know, Mattingly has a discectomy, has, you know, a couple, you know, simple back procedures, he's back. You know, and some of these other guys with knee injuries, you know, the Tommy John surgery didn't come in until the late 80s. What happens if Koufax had Tommy John surgery, comes back and pitches dominant baseball for another 7 years instead of having to retire, you know? It's just funny. You really have to take a look at errors and take all that stuff into consideration. Our final call of the show is Alan down in D.C. Alan, it's been a while, man. How are you?
Doing good, man. I like your pick, man. I like Brown, but I got to give it to Flip or Salsa, man. You know what I mean? It's one of those two, man. I see David Wilson stepping up, and depending on how he does on special teams, I think you might get a couple in special teams and a couple during the regular season. But what I really like is my man Cruz, man, especially with 100% or close to 100% Knicks. He's going to get a lot of, you know, a lot less attention than he did last season. And I think, you know, in the slot, you know, Eli knows what he's doing with Cruz. So I really like a lot of salsa dancing, man, this season, man. So I'm just prepared to dance, man. I'm ready to go. I wish the season would start now, you know what I mean? So I love the show, man. You do a great job getting us informed about what's going on, and I listen to you guys every day. But I like salsa, man. I got to tell him, man. I wish you told him, like, switch it up to merengue, bachata, do something, man. I want something, man. You just switch it up a little bit, you know. So if you see Cruz for me, let him know the Latin community wants a little something different.
I'll let him know, Alan. No problem.
All right, brother.
All right, have a good one. He wants to mix it up a little bit. He wants to, you know, a little merengue. He mentioned the cha-cha. I don't think Victor's going to do the cha-cha. That's probably out. I'm not going to lie. Little 1-2 cha-cha-cha. I don't think that's going to happen. I can see little merengue getting mixed in. I remember when he first did it, actually. All the broadcasters were guessing what type of dance he was doing. Papa thought it was the merengue, I think. He was wrong. I forget who the national guys thought it was, but it ended up being the salsa, so I'll pass that on, but something tells me Victor's not changing it. And I don't know if you guys ever noticed this, and I'm sure you guys do. When the Giants play a national TV on NBC and Victor scores a touchdown and they're going to commercial break, they actually roll salsa music going to break. Sometimes they just roll it in after he scores the touchdown and he starts dancing in the end zone. It's actually pretty funny. All right, everybody, good job on the Twitter. Good job on the phones. Excellent work. Have a great weekend. So next week, we start our position series. We'll go position by position and figure out what the Giants are going to do in terms of their depth chart, what roles these guys are going to play, and how each position group is going to, you know, pan out for the Giants. We're not going to do I think I'm going to try to do a specific question to each position group each day. So it's not just like, give me your depth chart. For some it might be, but others, we'll talk a little bit about how they, like for the running backs, how they split the carries between Brown and Wilson. We could talk about that. The backup quarterback position to me is fascinating. The offensive line, who's starting where, I think that's an interesting thing to talk about. There's a billion defensive tackles. There's a bunch of defensive ends for us to talk about. The linebackers are a mess. The corners, who's going to play that nickel spot, I think is very interesting. And then how many safeties are they even going to keep? Are they going to play three safeties a lot? Are they going to go more traditional three-corner nickel stuff with Aaron Ross back and maybe Terrell Thomas healthy? All interesting questions. And we have 10 shows, 2 weeks, to answer them all for you. Get your take, and we'll get ready for training camp. I'm here Monday and Tuesday next week. The Tino's got you Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Monday and Tuesday, the following week, will be the Great Lance Meadow, and then I'll take you home the rest of the way Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Maybe we'll mix it a co-host there here and there, too. We've been at Eisen on in a while. We got to put him to work. He's been skating over there. I think he's on vacation a little bit next week, isn't he, Eisen? I think so. You should know, Dan. You got to write all the stuff when he's not here. All right, everybody. Good job. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning right here on Giants.com at 10 a.m. Have a good one.